This will be short. I don't think they're all going to the bathroom. This will be short and sweet, guys. Talking about a couple of tough acts to follow, huh? I mean, they covered it. It's like unbelievable. Unbelievable. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here. Deadbeat too. We went on the downtown junket last night. I gotta reiterate what they were saying. It's like, I don't know what it is, why it's so important. Everybody mentioned it this morning. Why it's so important for us to look cool at all cost. You know, it's like you just don't want to look stupid. You know, and it's like we're sitting there on that subway. You know, we're not gonna. I don't know how many went down there. 14 of us, I guess, and we all got off the subway, and we're all standing there. We all walk up on the platform, you know, and out into the on the street, and we're all just, you know, catching flies, and it's like, oh shit! All is his mouths open everywhere, as long as the line's like, shit, you know. It's like, why would you take LSD? All you got to do is just come to New York City, and it is a trip. I don't know. A wonderful trip at that, and I like my brother. I am absolutely blown away with this area and the people in it. And I need to share that. Y'all are blessed. Y'all are absolutely blessed. I wanted to mention, because I was going through some of my stuff last night. We could have done away with this workshop altogether because I had stuck this in my notes. It's a little ad. Solve alcohol problems with the Phoenix Method. One, hypnosis. And there's a number to call right here. And so, basically, what I'm going to do from now on, I'm just going to get some copies of this, and then my 12-step call, confidential, rapid, pleasant, no hospitalization, no group meetings, no time off from work, no withdrawal symptoms. Unbelievable. See, this is what we're battling here, guys. This is what we're battling. This is a world of ignorance about alcoholism and drug addiction, a world of ignorance about the disease. We got a lot of people making money off our butts. We have a lot of people out there who don't understand, who are not one of us. They can't relate. I mean, y'all need to understand there's a world of difference. We talked about it this week. There's a world of difference between knowledge and experience. Y'all follow us? And a lot of people, Peter was just referring to it, there's a lot of people that have a lot of knowledge about this disease, but buddies, I'm going to tell you something, they cannot relate. I've said this from a million podiums. It's like me trying to go to a woman and say, honey, I understand what it's like to be a woman. You follow me? I mean, and I used to pride myself with the fact that I read a lot, and we were laughing about it in another group one time. I says, I'm probably the only guy in the 80s that ever subscribed to Cosmopolitan, you know, because I wanted to know about women. What the heck, you know, because if you know more about women, it's all selfish, guys, because you're going to get laid more. I mean, that's the ulterior motive. I knew a lot about women, folks, but I got to tell you something, folks. Absolutely about experience. I don't know nothing about a woman, and I will never know what it's like to be a woman because I'm not a woman. Can y'all get down with that? There's only a few people in this room. I met a couple of them this week. They've got one eye. You can relate to me with a guy with just one eye, and the rest of you two-eyed knuckleheads don't have a clue. The pain it is to go through life with just one. It's some shit. But y'all understand the point is what I'm trying to say. That's what makes us so valuable as an entity, because we have had the experience of wanting to stop and not being able to stop, of needing to stop and not being able to stop. You follow us? And then being able to go share that with somebody else in the same boat is an absolute gift. And that's what this is about. It's the whole 12-step deal. I mean, Myers and Peter just summed it up so succinctly. I mean, we've got our marching orders. We know what to do. It's in this book. You know, but 10 years ago, I started working for this hospital, and it's been a blessing to get to work there, and I hope I get a chance to stay there longer. I mean, I am a huge fan of people I'm a huge fan of treatment centers, and I'm a huge fan of therapists, and I believe that there's so much stuff out there that can be treated that way. You follow us? But alcoholism, the spiritual malady, can only be treated by God. And where we got off the page years ago, folks, is that we started listening to a whole bunch of other people out there who also wanted to candy coat this whole message down, and we wanted to take the God piece out. You follow us? It's like, you know, this program couldn't be any more open and roomy about our experience with God. It's like the God of your understanding. But you know, if you're going to take God out of the picture, then we don't have much to talk about. And shame on any of us that are wasting time on anybody that wants to fight this thing about God. Make sense? I mean, the questions in the book that we're supposed to ask are pretty succinct, pretty simple stuff, you know? Are you willing? Second step. They didn't put the second this consideration about God on step 12. They put this consideration right at the very beginning. Are you willing to believe that there's a power out there greater than you? Big shot? Well, yeah. Then we got something to work with. And if the answer is no, we have absolutely nothing to work with. Because I got to tell you something, folks, about this little piece of this lecture with me. I just got to tell you, we got to stop chasing drunks down. We got to stop thinking that we got to reform the world and make them think the way we're thinking, because it's not necessary. If you're ready to do this work, we got a solution for you. If you're not, bop till you drop. Have a nice life. I was on a 12-step call a couple of weeks ago, and these parents had called me for weeks. Chris, come see this guy. Come see this guy. I says, buddy, it's a waste of time, because I've talked to him before, and what they want me to do is talk this kid into getting sober. You follow us? And I walked in, the first question out of my mouth. I got my little big book. I'm ready to go. I said, little buddy, do you want to stop drinking? No. See ya. I got my book and got up and left. And she's in there fixing iced tea. She thinks we're going to be those long talks. She says, but Chris, come back. I says, thanks for the iced tea. I appreciate that, but I'm done here. Because I'm not going to sit here and waste my time trying to convince somebody to get on this spiritual path. You're not going to stop until you're done. Can y'all get down with that? You think you got it in you to continue to do this deal? Just go. Because here's what we're doing. We're doing it with a lot of the young adults, and we're doing it with a lot of folks. We're getting in the middle, and we're pushing this too damn hard. And what we're doing is we're ruining our chances down the line to be able to help them. Because we won't stay out of their freaking face. If they don't want to be approached, if they don't want to visit about this, if they're not ready, then we need to back off. Is that a risky business? Yes. Could they die? Absolutely. Absolutely. But to continue to push when they're not ready just ruins our opportunity to help them ever. I don't want those AA guys. They're just a bunch of fanatics. I hear it all the time. I've got a hospital full of people coming into our place of business who need to get sober, but they see the steps on the wall and you can see their face fall because, oh shit, I've tried this AA stuff. I've had that stuff rammed down my throat for years. You follow me? We need to stop as a fellowship ramming this down people's throat. If you want it, great. And then if they say they want it, let's make sure we're giving them the right message. Can y'all get down with that? Because that's exactly what we're here about. A couple of things real quick. You know, we referred to it yesterday and on Friday. We talked about this business. And I want to make sure we get real clear about this. You know, when Ebby 12-stepped Bill Wilson, a very short period of time sober, he got on a bus and he went and tried to find Bill Wilson. The story's in the book. And he sits down with a guy. And the first thing they do is they sit down at this table. And Bill's sitting there drinking. And Ebby's talking to him. And first thing they do is they start telling some quote, war stories. They start commiserating and visiting about their drinking days. You with me? And then Ebby, I've done this 1,000 times. Ebby says, hey, buddy, he gets to a place where the war stories are coming to a stop. And Bill says, well, what do I got to do? And then Ebby sets the hook. He says, I got religion. You follow me? He immediately starts to talk about God. What did Bill Wilson do 6 months later? He's sober. He's in there in Akron with Dr. Bob. They talk to Dr. Bob. It says they shared a few stories. They got him comfortable. They started visiting a little bit. And then what did Bill Wilson do? He tells him about God. He sets the hook. You with us? They go do Bill D. A couple of weeks later, they go do Bill D. And alcoholic number 3, they do the same thing. They get his confidence. They find out if he wants to get sober. They qualify the cat. And then they start talking about God, the spiritual solution. It's like we got these guys coming to us. They're in our meetings. Now listen, guys. I mean, we got them in the boat. You know, it's like a big fish flopping around in the bottom of the boat. And we want to talk to them about everything else under the sun except God. We're not jamming this down anybody's throat. They're saying, what can I do to get well? Hey, it's a thing called a spiritual experience. But we don't want to talk about it because we're too, just exactly what Peter said. We're tippy-toeing around, watering the message down because we don't want to scare them off. And the sad part is, if we do that long enough, they're going to go out and drink anyway. And then who's going to take the blame? I mean, at some point, Jesus, guys, we got to start taking some responsibility, I think, for the messages that we're carrying in the meetings. We're so damn concerned about some old-timer back. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous in 1987. I've been around AA for 7 years, in and out, can't get sober. And in 1987, I get hooked up with a bunch of big book thumpers, and there's one old guy in there, though, and I'm talking to some newcomers in a meeting, and the old-timer comes up and says, Chris, you know, you don't want to talk about too much about God with these newcomers. You know, you're scaring them off. Let me see if I can get this my mind around this one here. You're telling me that the one thing that's going to save my ass is God, but now you're telling me not to tell that to the newcomer. Now this is a little confusing for me to understand. Can y'all get down? What are we doing? We're walking on eggshells around everything. Come on. There's a couple of things that we got to have in order to get sober, folks, and the big book spends some pages talking about it. It's called, we need a little discipline. You follow us? The book talks about we use the steps to discipline because we were an undisciplined lot. That was me. We need to discipline ourselves a bit to do certain things. The spiritual principles we were talking about this weekend, the prayer and meditation. Buddies, that takes discipline. Y'all understand it? The other thing is responsibility. They got the sign on all the walls, whenever the hand of AA reaches out, you know, whenever the guy drunk reaches out, the hand of AA ought to be here. I'm responsible for that. You think the hand of AA is just a pot of coffee and a warm smile and a hug? You think that's it? Because that's where we've gotten off the page. The hand of AA is this. The message. Fifth tradition. One responsibility. To stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's our responsibility. Make sense? And you know the problem is we got a bunch of people in the fellowship that just flat don't want to accept their place in the trench with us. The book says we stand shoulder to shoulder carrying the message of hope to the newcomer. And we got a lot of people in our fellowships that don't want to do that. So why am I saying this? I'm preaching to the choir. Y'all want to do it. Most of y'all in this room are lathered up little thumpers. Y'all are out there kicking butt and taking names. The reason I want to mention this is this. Everywhere I go speak, I land in rooms like this. I got to tell you, usually not as large a room as this with as many people on the page as we are. Because what Meyer said is so true. We speak at so many places. They get us to speak. We're like hired henchmen, you know. Chris, I want you to come to this meeting, and I want you to straighten these bastards out. They're middle of the road. It's like you're setting us up for an ass whipping when you do that, you know. You couldn't straighten them out, so now you want us to come. But what's the truth? The truth is because you haven't got the balls to say what needs to be said. Isn't that the truth? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Come on, folks. See, sometimes when you share the message, and then we share this stuff on the podium passionately, and we're like, rrr, and then you walk into a meeting and try to do the same thing in an AA meeting. And I think we don't make this difference to you, this differentiation. We need to make this. Do you think for a second that we're suggesting that all of you guys walk into a meeting and start jamming this book an inch at a time up somebody's butt? It's like, folks... There's a place. It's like what we're talking about, the war stories. Is there a place for a war story? Yes. It's called a 12-step call. Do you need to do that in a discussion meeting? Absolutely not. It's like there's a place for everything. There's a place for the passion. We're in a podium. We're talking to a room full of people. We're excited about recovery. You go into a meeting, folks, there's different ways to carry the message. Peter is referring to it. The message can be carried 1,000 different ways. All we're saying is, please carry the message in your own way. I mean, I've said this from a million podiums. God dang, guys, the last thing you ever want to do is listen to one of my CDs and then go into an open discussion meeting. It's called leading with the chin, you know, and it's like... Because you walk into the meetings and you're all lathered up and you're... And some little lady's back over in the corner and she's in a bad spot, you know. And the first thing you... And she starts talking, gets off the subject and you eat her ass. You know, you just... You know, you're all over and it's like... Guys, we're not accomplishing anything when we do that. You know, I know. See, the book talks about a code of love and tolerance. And I can't believe... I know y'all are saying, Chris Raymer's talking about love and tolerance from the podium. Love and tolerance. But you see, we don't want to take it too far. I've said it before. There was a lady in Box 459 that wrote this one time. It's one of my favorite quotes out of that little publication that New York puts out. She says, at what point does love and tolerance become apathy? I mean, love and tolerance can be disguised as apathy. It's like you're talking and you're making an ass of yourself and you're off the page and you're really confusing some people, but everybody's just going to shut up and smile, being loving and tolerant, instead of correcting it. You with us? We don't understand how powerful the human word is. I don't sit on the sidelines and let a meeting go down the shitter, folks. I don't sit on the sidelines and let somebody monopolize a meeting. I mean, let's just talk for a second, 12-step stuff, about meeting etiquette. We've got a bunch of newcomers sitting in a meeting. It's an hour-long meeting. It's an open discussion. And we're going to let some idiot talk for 40 minutes. Well, he just needed a place to share. No. Was the problem? Let me ask you a question, because I've done this. Was the problem the long-winded speaker? The problem was not the long-winded speaker. The meeting format was the problem. The meeting format allowed this guy to do that. Can y'all get down with that? I mean, a lot of you guys are talking about starting new meetings, and you want to go out there and you want to carry the message of hope to as many people as possible. But you're going back into meetings whose formats are etched in stone, you follow it, that allow people to whine about their problems. Hell, I've been in 1,000 meetings in the format itself it says, if you've got a problem and you need to talk about it, come on in and talk about it. Well, and they're doing that, and then you're getting pissed at them. Yes? Yeah. So we got two choices, folks, as I see it. We can go into those meetings at group conferences and try to change those meetings and try to change the formats to not allow that shit, to try to focus more back in on the topic, on the solution. You follow us? Or, like our friends in PA are going to do, and like some of y'all I've talked to this week, you go out and start your own literature-based meeting. You see, the traditions tell us what to talk about. They also say that we can set up a meeting any way we want to. It doesn't have to be just like the meeting down the street. You can set it up any way you want. Make sense? That's what we need to do. See, we teach the newcomer how to behave. Everybody wants to take shots at treatment centers. Well, the treatment centers almost killed AA. They did. And you know who allowed it? Who stood on the sidelines and watched it happen? AA. Because nobody wanted to take a stand. Nobody wanted to stand for anything. When somebody wants to go off on left field and talk about their psychobabble bullshit, we all just sit there and roll our eyes and go get another cup of coffee and just let them share. Instead of shutting them down in a heartbeat. Guys, I've said it. I'll say it. I'm going to make it quick as I can. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. If you're using AA as a dumping ground for your problems, quit and quit now. Yeah. And if that offends you, no, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be abrasive with anybody. I'm in character defects. I'm trying to be a little gentler. I'm just telling you, we got to get back to the basics, because here's what's happening. The newcomer, just like Peter was talking about, is coming into the meeting and he's scared to death and he's freaked out. And he knows instinctively that we have the answer, because he can see the light in our eyes. He can see the people, the changes in us, and he wants what we have. But he comes into the room and he gets confused, because all we seem to be doing is talking about the individual problems. So he wants to participate. So what does he do? He starts talking about his individual problems. And before you know it, we got a bunch of people talking about our problems and nobody getting well. Folks, talking about problems is not going to fix what's wrong with me. Is it necessary to talk about those problems? I've said it a million times. Of course it's necessary. Let's do it. Find a good therapist. Get some friends. Guys, the big line. Let's go to Denny's, for Christ's sake. You know, let's sit there at Denny's. Let's talk until the cows come. We'll stay up all night and talk about these issues. But guys, in a meeting, we just got a short period of time. Let's share some hope with a newcomer so that they'll come back next time. Because we are ruining our chances with the newcomer. We may have one shot with them. We're going to ruin it by talking about your fucked up day. We got to stop that business. And why do we do it? Because somebody taught us that it was okay to do it, and now we teach the guys we sponsor. And at what point are we going to draw the line and say it's not okay? It is not okay to talk about your problems in a meeting. It is not okay to talk about your problems in a meeting. Come before the meeting. Stay late after the meeting. Jesus, guys, all of us have got problems. I just listen to some of you guys hurt so bad this week, and you're in a bad spot, and you're scared, and you got stuff going. And I'm down with you. Let's try to get you some help. Let's try to help you with those things. But let's keep our focus in the meeting for what we were supposed to be there for. Talking about the power of God. Please. Amen. In 1987, when I got back to the fellowship, I landed in a room full of people that understood that, and what they shared with me was a lot of hope. Tenth step that Hector was talking about, one of the lines in there says that we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, and that includes AA. You follow us? We just shouldn't have to do it. My sponsor says we don't have to defend the big book. What we need to do is just come armed with the facts about ourselves, share in a general way what it was like in our lives, look for a newcomer to work with, snag him, and let's go to town. Let's see if we can help him get connected. Every one of you big book thumpers that sat in these rooms for years and have taken the heat, I'm going to say this with absolute reverence. I love and respect every single one of you. For every one of you guys that took a sideways comment from some middle-of-the-road son of a bitch in a meeting, you follow us? Thank you. For every one of you that were talking about God's power and took a sideways comment from the next person, well, let's not try to get too spiritual in here. And you stood your ground and took it. Thank you. Thank you for keeping the message clear and succinct. real quick. We got too many people sitting in meetings with this idea. I've said it a million times when I was trying to get sober in the early 80s. How can I? Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. And I'll sit there in a meeting and, I know I need to do 12-step work, but how can I help them? I can't even help myself. You heard me. It's like, yeah, you're right. You're getting closer to the truth than you know, buddy. You know. See, guys, in 87 they explained to me, Chris, you're right. You can't help yourself. You've got a disease that's going to kill you. You're going to need God's intervention there. And you got all these problems piling up on you. And the book says if you'll just do certain things, you'll get some power in your life. And that power will show you how to deal with those issues. So you're absolutely correct. Your job is, we talked about it on Friday. Your job is not to make the flower grow. Your job is just to plow the stupid field. Nobody asked you to make it grow. You with us? Nobody asked you to make it rain. They just said, can you plow the field? Make sense? See, but we don't want to do that. I want to take care of everything, get it all figured out, and then we're not asking you to do that. We're asking you to suit up and show up, come armed with the facts about yourself, get some literature, and try to share your hope with a newcomer. Can you do that? Guess what happens while God's doing that? While God's over here, you know, you're over here, we're working with a newcomer, you know, just trying to carry the message. God's steady over here trying to take care of your stuff. Because I don't know about you. Let me have a show of hands in here. How many have experienced this miracle? While I'm over here working with this, all of a sudden that chicken shit problem that was driving me crazy was being taken care of back over here, and I never had to touch a hand to it. My financial shit took care of itself. My health stuff took care of itself. Y'all understand that? Relationship stuff started taking care of itself. I just did what they finally asked me to do. The old timers had such a tough time with me because I was so in. I just want to sit in a meeting and listen to you and leave. I don't want to give back. You with us? Old timer one time, he said, Chris, you've been a taker all your life. When are you going to start giving? First thing they ever asked me, some of y'all heard me talk about this on tape. Not the cough. This. First thing they asked me to do, I was 2 days sober in North Texas, sitting in this room, and it was a little small room, it's a little entryway into this clubhouse, and there was a telephone in there, and what they asked me to do is they said, Chris, we want you to help us out here. Would you answer the phone if it rings? No. Okay, so, and they says, no. Let's rephrase this a little bit. Chris, we got to go back and do this meeting, and we understand you've been around the fellowship a long time, blah, 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 but we need you to help us answer the telephone. Okay? No. What part of no didn't you understand? I mean, I'm still detoxing, and you're asking me to answer the phone. I want to go in the meeting with you guys. Chris, the problem is you can't get sober because you won't give back to the fellowship. You know, we talk about 12-step as carrying the message. I understand that. But our service manual makes it perfectly clear. Anything that helps carry the message to the newcomer, y'all understand that? The cats that busted their ass all weekend long making coffee, you with us? Were we blessed by that? Is that a part of this program? Absolutely. Is carrying the message? Yes, of course it is. But it's everything that involves it, everything that allows it to happen. Is cleaning the toilets in the bathroom in a AA club or mopping the floor or doing anything of service? Is that part of helping? So the place looks nice when the newcomer comes in? Of course it is. Chris, listen, answer the phone. And it got down to brass tacks why I didn't want to do it. I don't know how. What do I say? What do I do? Guys, the phone rings instantly. And they all sitting around like this. There's three of them in there, and they're all sitting like this. And they all cross their arms like this, and the phone's ringing. And I'm looking at them, and they're looking at me. Just none pulse, just... God's looking down over his glasses. What do I say? Just answer the phone. Say, hey, hey, it's Louisville Group. Hey, hey. Pick up the phone, you know. Louisville Group. She starts talking. It's a lady on the phone. She starts talking a little bit. She's looking for an Al-Anon meeting. She's not even a drunk, for Christ's sake. She's looking for an Al-Anon meeting. I said, she needs a meeting. It's Al-Anon. She needs a meeting. Then they showed me. Guys, they didn't just let me alone. They stood right there and helped me do this. It's like chairing the meetings. You can't chair a meeting for the first 2 years until you're sober. I understand the reasoning behind it because it's a position of responsibility. Why don't you get an old-timer to sit down with you about the second week you're in the fellowship and start chairing meetings, and you'll stay in this fellowship. Yeah. Can y'all get down with what I'm saying? This idea, you got to find a job. And they picked one for me. Answer the phone. They said, Chris, the meeting schedule is right here. Al-Anon meeting right here. Check it out. Right here. Get on the phone. Yes. Yep. Absolutely. We got one at 7:30. Al-Anon meeting. And I'm talking to this lady and I realize I know this lady. I drink with her husband. He had a house. He had a true story. He had a house right behind a barbecue restaurant that I own there in Texas. And so we used to drink over the fence together. And that's real camaraderie stuff. You know, pee in the dark. Yeah. Okay. And this lady says, oh, I cannot believe I got you on the phone. It's a miracle. I says, I'm so nervous about doing this, but I've got to go to a meeting. I'm going crazy here. I says, buddy, I don't have anything else to do right now. I'll wait for you out front. You know what I look like with a patch. You can't miss me in anything. So I says, come. And I waited for her, and she got, you'll follow me? Shit, guys, I mean, I hung up the phone, and the world didn't shift and all this. It's just, you know, but all of a sudden what happened, you know? I mean, I've done this 1,000 times. I said, you know, I got this one. Our archive literature is full of stories like this. All of a sudden, I started standing a little taller, you know. Hey, buddy, that's a, what are you putting your butt out on the floor? Put it back in the trash can. Where it goes. You know, all of a sudden, you know, this is not your club. Thank you for having me. It's our club. It's my club. Thanks for coming. Y'all understand? Because I started participating. God, they didn't know what they did. You know, I mean, they created a monster. I was there 5 years, and you were lucky if you ever got near that telephone, you know, because that... The phone would ring and I'd beat you to it. Oh, that's, buddy, this is very important stuff here. You could kill somebody if you don't answer this phone right. Oh, shit. But see, once you find your place in this fellowship and realize that you have a seat here, that you have a reason for being here, everything shifts. Everything shifts. You're not monitoring these places anymore. Now you're a part of these places. I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a home group. I got a sponsor, and I sponsor a bunch of men in this fellowship. Thanks absolutely for allowing me to do that. I mean, that's the absolute coolest. Let me read something to you, and I'll let you go. Y'all have been great. This has been floated around forever, folks. And I don't know how long it's been around. Somebody sent it to me. It's, I don't know. Some of y'all have read it, I'm sure. And I'll try to get through it without crying. Texans don't cry. It's called A Drunk Fell in a Hole. It's the best. It's real short. A drunk fell in a hole and couldn't get out. A businessman went by. The drunk called out for help. The businessman threw him some money and told him to get himself a ladder. But the drunk could not find a ladder in the hole he was in. A doctor walked by. The drunk said, help, I can't get out. The doctor gave him some drugs and said, hey, take this. It'll relieve the pain. The drunk said, thanks. But when the pills ran out, he was still in a hole. A renowned psychiatrist rode by, heard the drunk crying for help. He stopped and said, how did you get there? Were you born there? Here's my favorite line. Were you put there by your parents? Tell me about yourself. It will alleviate your sense of loneliness. So the drunk talked with him for an hour. Then the psychiatrist had to leave, but he said he'd be back next week. The drunk thanked him, but he was still in his hole. A priest came by and the drunk called for help. The priest gave him a Bible and said, I'll pray for you. He got down on his knees and prayed for the drunk, then left. The drunk was very grateful. He read the Bible, but he was still in the hole. A recovering alcoholic happened to be passing by, and the drunk cried out, hey, help me. I'm stuck in this hole. Right away, the recovered alcoholic jumped in the hole with him. The drunk said, what are you doing? Now we're both stuck in the hole. But the recovered alcoholic said, it's okay. I've been there before. I know the way out. Why does that affect me? Why, every time I read it, does it affect me that way? All I ever wanted to do all my life was be useful to somebody. You know, my prayers as a kid was I didn't want to grow up and own a big car and have a lot of money. I just wanted to be okay in my own skin and know that I could help somebody else. That was my prayer. I remember verbally praying that at 14. and an adulthood later, a bunch of men and women, young people, old people, gay people, straight people, black people, white people, showed me how I could be helpful. And for one brief moment, I got my arrogance out of the way long enough to say, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I've walked this path as bumbling as I could for the last 15 years. And I've been able to affect a few people along the way. By just staying sober and reaching out and showing somebody that I'd been there before and I knew the way out. That's why everyone in this room is so valuable to us. Each and every one of you have got talents that nobody else in this room's got. Some of you guys are great with a computer and you're sending us information that we desperately need constantly. My friend Bill and a bunch of you in this room have done that. The cats from Iceland, you know, they're all over the tapers. You know, they're getting this stuff out. I mean, how many millions of people are going to be affected because some people got together and put this stuff out on the airways? You follow us? You cats that are organized and you're keeping the books in your groups and taking care of the money. This is exactly what it's about. We need every single person in this room in the trenches with us. See, knowing God's will is not the same as doing God's will. A lot of you in this room know what God's will is. You instinctively know what you're supposed to be doing, but you're not doing it. And that's why you're bored. And that's why you're depressed. And that's why you don't feel a part of. Find your job in this fellowship. Volunteer. Get to the jitter joints. Do the talks. Participate any way you can. But please participate. I've been absolutely blessed. I guarantee you I can speak from the rest of the guys. Sometimes, you know, we go to these conferences and we just leave exhausted because it's just been a battle from arguing back and forth with this spiritual message of hope. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. I've experienced this one other time. I've experienced it here at Fellowship of the Spirit every time I've ever been here. I'd experienced it one other time, and that was when I went to Iceland with the guys. Y'all are all blessed to be a part of such a tremendous fellowship, everybody on the same page. Y'all stick with us. When I say I want you to email, I want you to email. When I say I want you to stay in touch, just stay in touch. And if I don't see you before next year, I guarantee you I'll see you here next year. Thanks, guys.